We're going to call the Finance Committee meeting for March 23rd to order. Do we need to have roll call?
For the record, yes. Director Collins?
Present.
Director Zamuda?
Present.
Chair Davis?
Here. Thank you.
We have a quorum.
Excellent. Are we going to do the pledge?
We can do the pledge, yes.
Great.
We do have a flag in the room.
We can't see it, but that's okay.
It's all right.
All need us? I pledge allegiance
to the flag
of the United States of America.
To the Republic for which it stands,
one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. There it is.
Okay. That's
right.
A good one.
The virtual pledge of allegiance. Okay. These are indeed different times. We are on to item 3, public comment for items not on the agenda. And will the board secretary let us know if there are items for public comment? And will the board secretary also let us know what the procedure is for public comment for this meeting?
Yes, we do have one speaker. The process for this is for members to please send an email to publiccomment@caltrain.com, or they may use the Q&A feature to type in their email, and it will be read into the record and timed accordingly. I believe Mr. LeBrun has a question or a comment.
Great. Will you read that, please?
I'm waiting for him to respond. Thank you.
Okay.
Roland, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So all I wanted to say, I don't have a public comment right now, but if we do wish to speak, I think the procedure is to click on the raise your hand, and then when the time comes, you can ask a member of the public if they got anything to say. That's it.
Thank you.
Yes. Chair Davis, that would be appropriate as to any item that comes up. This is the general public comment, right?
That's correct.
There are no other speakers at this time.
Okay. So, Dora, for the record, you're checking the Q&A, the public comment email address, and participants to see if they've raised their hand.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So we will move on to item 4, which is to approve the meeting minutes for February 24th. And do we have any public comment on the meeting minutes?
At this time, I do not see any comments.
Okay.
Move to approve.
Oh, excuse me. There is a hand raised. Director Zamuda.
I was moving to approve.
Then I'll second.
Excellent. We have a motion and a second. Do we have to do roll call for all of these?
I believe so. I defer to our legal counsel.
Yes, Chair Davis, we do need to do roll call since it's technically a telephonic meeting.
Okay.
Director Collins?
Yes.
Director Zamuda?
Aye.
Chair Davis?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Great. We will move on to item 5, and it is finance and ridership updates as it relates to COVID-19. Derek and Michelle.
Good afternoon. Let's see, we need to get the PowerPoint presentation brought up. There you go.
We're not seeing the PowerPoint yet.
Oh, okay.
There we go.
There it is.
Super. Jim, did you want to say anything as an introduction to this?
Yes. Thank you, Derek. Committee members, as you know, this is a trying time. We've tried to keep people updated by providing some general information. As you'll see in the PowerPoint, we're in a dramatically different circumstance, both in terms of ridership and revenue on Caltrain. I think the PowerPoint is, to some extent, outdated, only in that every day that goes by, there is some change of one kind or another. And so we can supplement what's in the PowerPoint. But it's helpful for us not only to present this to you as an information item, but there will be some comments and suggestions that both Derek and Michelle will have that we'd love to hear your reaction to as well as the PowerPoint concludes.
Thank you, Jim. I'm going to start with the ridership impacts, and this is this chart just shows one-way and day pass ticket sales basically since the week of February 24th. So you can get a quick sense. The week of the 24th was actually a rather good week for us until that Friday. And you could start seeing a little bit the trend going on Friday. And then the following week, the week of the 2nd, as some of the local scares became a little more prominent, you see the notable drop-off in ridership. You know, again, those one-way and day-pass ticket sales the week of the 2nd. That accelerated the week of the 9th, and then obviously with this 6-county order that then became a statewide order toward last week, you can see we're dropping off to the point where on Friday, where we would typically sell north of about 20,000 one-way tickets, we sold about 1,000 one-way tickets. Weekend ridership has also plummeted over the weekend this past just yesterday and Saturday, we were selling under 400 tickets each way, each day on a one-way basis. Just to remind folks a little bit of our fare revenue composition, and this has changed over the past several years with the increases in GoPass pricing that we've done, as well as certainly last year in calendar 19, significant increases in GoPass uptake. That utilization has gone from 15% to 25% on a fare revenue basis. That's of about we had projected about $110 million in revenue this year from fares. About 25% of that, just under $30 million, from GoPass sales, and the balance from daily and monthly sales. So when we see the kind of ridership drops, even though we've got a degree of insulation, certainly more than many of our peers who don't sell an annual product like the GoPass, the huge drops in ridership when we've got a 70% fare box recovery ratio and are so dependent on those fare box revenues to be able to operate creates significant problems for us. This following page just serves as a quick reminder of kind of what that composition of funding is for us. Again, 10 years ago, we were at just under half of our operating revenue from the fare box. Now it's almost 70%. And so we just don't have a lot of other sources of revenue that are able to cushion us at this kind of in this kind of dramatic circumstance. Again, to remind folks as well, the vast majority of our expenses are associated with the TASI contract. Certainly, fuel is a not insignificant component, but less than it used to be. That's coming down both because of utilization, as we've taken the schedule down from 92 to 70 trains, but also most recently because of the price decreases that we're seeing in the diesel fuel itself. So probably the biggest question we're getting asked is, How's your liquidity? Are you able to meet your obligations, including keeping the service running? So I want to talk a little bit about financial liquidity. Again, the GoPass sales for calendar 2020 represent nearly $30 million. And so if there's any good news in this, it's that it happened in late February and early March, as opposed to at a different point in the calendar, because we start with a fair bit of cash. Non-GoPass fares represent a little over $7 million a month in our revenue. And again, we anticipate losing as much of as 90% of that fare revenue. And frankly, based on recent trends, just Thursday and Friday, it could be more like 95%.
You mean on a weekly, on a week-to-week basis? So March won't come in at 90% below, right?
March won't come in at 90% below, but April could well, depending on what happens to recovery, right. Recovery of ridership if there's a relaxation in the orders.
Right. Okay.
So again, the good news is we began this period with a healthy cash cushion. So I want to let you know what we're doing and things we may be able to do. We did initiate last week a $10 million. We have an operating line of credit that we arranged with J.P. Morgan as part of the refinancing that we undertook in February of 2019. So we arranged for a $20 million operating line of credit. We have drawn on $10 million of that, so half of that operating line of credit. We don't need it right now, but frankly, given all the push on liquidity throughout the entire U.S. economy, we thought it was prudent to go ahead and get that cash today. So we've done that. We do still have another $10 million remaining on that line. And frankly, we've gotten calls from a number of our banking partners indicating their willingness and availability to make additional funding available to us as necessary. We've got other significant liquidity levers, some of which we've already tapped. So we've got the managing agency relationship with the San Mateo County Transit District. We typically pay the district quarterly. Because of some reconciliation, we actually owe the district for about 6 months worth of accumulated costs, a net of about $20 million. Right now, the district is just holding on to that bill. The district does have some cash pressures of its own, but they're a little less certainly than currently face Caltrain. So at the moment, we're just holding on to that bill. We also have the capital line of credit, so that's a total of $130 million, split $100 million for the electrification program, $30 million for the match of the TRSA program, and we could and probably will draw on that line of credit as necessary. And then finally, you may remember that a couple months ago, we asked for the ability to take $8 million of the state rail assistance funding and use it to serve as a match for the TRSIP grant for the EMU purchases. But that's an area where we may be able to reprogram that back into the operating account and then just use those borrowed funds to serve as the match, at least on an interim basis. Any questions on financial liquidity before I turn it over to Michelle to talk a little bit about what we're doing on the operating side?
I'll ask my my colleagues first. I have one question. Just wave at the camera. It's probably easier. You both have questions. All right. Go ahead, Monique, and then Ron.
Okay. This is regarding the TASI operators. So are they all working? Are they on, or are they are home on leave? Or what's the status of their getting paychecks and our ability to continue paying?
Yep. So I'll and I'm going to touch on quite a bit of this with the next slide, but with the reduction in service, we have not furloughed any TASI employees. They are continuing to work and continuing to be paid. What we are doing is for those that would have been operating in train service on those 22 trips that have been reduced, we're trying to do several things, including trying to push as many TASI employees onto the capital program as can be supported by the capital program by advancing some of that work. That's one thing. The second thing is there is annual refresher training that typically is performed on overtime. And so what we're doing is we're trying to capitalize on some straight time available hours for employees that that they'll get their training done more cost effectively than it would be if we were doing it on overtime. It's worth mentioning, and then I'll talk more about it, that, you know, given the kind of ridership that Derek's talking about, we will be probably fairly soon looking at additional service reductions, and that will be very tricky in order for us to figure out how, again, we would not have to furlough TASI individuals. What's really tough for us to balance is we want to keep as many folks on property as possible. So when this little nightmare of ours ends, then we can ramp back up as quickly as possible. We don't want to lose the experience of the engineers and other folks that take a significant amount of training to get certified to do their jobs.
Okay, and then my second question has to do with the lines of credit. And I thank you and congratulate you, Derek, for establishing those lines of credit ahead of time when things were so good. So we've already drawn $10 million out of the 20. Are you expecting the additional 20 to be drawn fairly soon? And then secondly, in anticipating drawing on the capital line of credit, can you actually draw on that and use it for the operating?
So let me actually address that second question first, because the answer is a little easier. So we can't really draw on the capital line for operating expenses, but we've had enough cash that we've not needed to draw on the capital line of credit, but we actually do have several expenses that are outstanding that are eligible for putting onto the capital line of credit where we've not yet been reimbursed. So we could certainly justify borrowing up against that and then keeping that on a rolling basis. We typically have in the range of 20 plus million. Right now it's higher of PSEP expenses that have been billed but not yet been collected.
Derek, and also maybe to explain why we have paid out of cash and not drawn down the line of credit. We're trying to keep our interest cost. We have been trying to keep the interest costs down.
Absolutely. And when we were cash rich, let me rephrase that, cash richer, you know, low these many weeks ago, that was something that seemed like a pretty good thing, was to minimize that interest expense and the burden on the electrification program. Now that we're in a very different situation, we can kind of reverse out that decision essentially at any time by just borrowing up against invoices that we've already paid, but again, for which we've not yet received funds from our funding partners.
Okay. Thank you.
So does that answer that question, Monique?
Yes, it does.
Okay, great. On the question of the other 10, the answer will be it depends. So the first thing I'm going to do is draw against the capital line of credit. I'll keep my powder dry on the other 10 in the operating line until I need it. And frankly, that could well be a function of what action or inaction takes place in Washington with respect to funding assistance for transit agencies.
Thank you.
Ron?
I think Derek partially answered my question, and that was how much federal bailout money are we eligible for?
That's a great question, Ron, and it's moving hour by hour. The Senate package that was put together did not move forward over the weekend. A House package was created today. I would say, and it's uncertain as to what will be passed and when it will be passed, but I would say that the House package is better overall for public transit. It has billions of dollars more, and it is based upon the estimates of need provided by the American Public Transportation Association, to which we sent our needs. And Speaker Pelosi's office has directly requested from the region the figures that we felt we would need to sustain our service. And her office has been tremendous and supportive. But how that works out in terms of actual dollars that would go to Caltrain is still up in the air. The global dollars that are in the House package are good for the nation in terms of the initially identified needs. So once something's passed, we'll have a better idea, but the money would not likely directly flow to transit agencies. For example, in our region's case, it may flow to MTC for distribution based upon certain formulas and criteria. We have been working closely with MTC as well, having emergency calls last week and this weekend. I and other transit agencies signed off on a specific ask to the federal government and to our congressional and Senate representatives as well. And we are also not only working closely with others in terms of federal funding, but we are working very closely with the California Transit Association, which is our trade group, of which we are a member of the governing body, the executive committee, on state funding. And so we are in close contact through the CTA for state funding. It's still unclear what may happen there. I was appointed by the CTA to a crisis funding task force that actually is meeting later today to further talk about how we refine our asks. So there's a lot going on, but it's just uncertain as to what will happen and when it'll happen.
So it sounds like there are potentially various areas that we can get some relief, possibly.
Correct.
Well, my next question was going to be, what's the worst case? But it sounds like that's impossible to answer because there's so many avenues to go down before you get to some, you know, dire level. So.
Well, I could articulate a worst case that I'd rather not, but you can imagine that under the current trajectory, if we had no state or federal funds and if we had no other external funds that came to us to support our service, then Derek has a liquidity schedule and at a point at which we can't pay our bills and wouldn't be able to operate. And Michelle will talk more about this in her slides about the kinds of things we're doing to try to avoid that.
Yeah, okay. Conversation we thought we'd never have.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
The only question I have remaining, thank you to my colleagues, you asked most of my questions, is does any of the insurance that we have cover any of this? I know some businesses have insurance and some of them do and don't cover this particular case.
Yeah, long story short, we have had conversations with our insurance brokers and we don't believe there's coverage. We do maintain business interruption insurance, but it's typically related to physical damage. So we think it's highly unlikely that this would be a covered loss. And in fact, what's more likely to come out as a result of this is folks are already talking to us about putting in pandemic exclusions.
Great, because you want insurance for when you can never use it.
It's been a delightful couple weeks.
I'm sure.
I see yes. A new line of insurance coming.
All right, let's continue on with the slides before we take public comment.
Okay.
And sure. Dora, just so you know, I've noticed that people are also utilizing the chat feature. So there's yet another thing for you and Shirley to check.
We don't use the chat feature officially because my understanding is it does not record for the record. So I have emailed Dave Baruto directly about this. So thank I could you. Read it into the record later.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. So just briefly, I'll talk a little bit about some of what we've been doing with TASI. And I talked about it a little bit in terms of answering Director Zmuda's question. Effective 3/17, we took the step of reducing service by removing the baby bullets out of the schedule. And as I mentioned, really what we've been able to do is retain the workforce, but try to figure out creatively how to continue to get value out of them in terms of pushing them onto required training and or advancing some of the capital program, largely state of good repair projects that TASI would be self-performing. And just to give you a sense of what we're talking about, we've got 450 folks from TASI that are on the operating and maintenance side. So that's basically the part that bills to what is the roughly $90 million budget for TASI. There are another 100 that are dedicated to the capital program. So immediately what we did is we put in a hiring freeze for TASI. So instead of them hiring up, they had 26 positions that were empty and were in the process of recruitment. So we stopped that. Additionally, the capital program had 6 vacancies, and so we've taken some folks from the operating side and pushed them onto the capital side. Really you've got it's like a no stone unturned kind of approach to things. However, as Derek was talking about, we're providing service out there, and even at the 70 train level, far exceeds what demand would warrant. The good news is, with such few riders, there really is ample capability to socially distance when they're on the train. But it's true that the 70 train schedule really is just not something that we can sustain for very much longer, or should be sustaining for very much longer. Team is taking a look at further reductions to go roughly hourly. We're looking at a potential 42 train scenario, and that we believe likely would require us to reduce the TASI forces. We're in the process of looking over all of the union agreements to see, again, before we take that as a final or last resort, we really do want to see how much additional state of good repair work we can advance, both in the right of way as well as on the vehicles, because there's going to be plenty of rolling stock that's not going to be operating. This with the clarification by the governor in his emergency order, we're trying to find the opportunities here. And so for the capital program, we're trying to see how we can advance that work as much as possible. And so our team here, both on the PCEP and on the regular capital program, have been working with the contractors out in the field to see if that can be accomplished. That also would help us to keep some TASI folks gainfully employed. So we're still working on whether that will be possible in terms of the contractors. So, you asked Director Collins about, what would a worst case scenario be? And certainly the team here, the management team, has sort of gone to those dark places. one of the questions is, do we ever just cease operation? And I have to say, I mean, on the surface of it, that seems like it would be a simple, cost-effective thing to do. But, nothing could be further from the truth. The process of demobilizing and securing all of the vehicle and other assets can be extremely costly, particularly if you're talking about a longer-term shutdown. Then we'd be looking at having to mothball locomotives and cars. We have facilities that will need to be secured on an ongoing basis. Mm-hmm. That there's the notion of it actually costing a chunk of money to even contemplate and begin the demobilization process, and then remobilizing. There's no saying whether all of our skilled crafts will be around to come back on the property once we remobilize. So while we are looking at that, we're looking at that in order to provide a very succinct description of why that's not a good idea and likely isn't cost effective. The other thing we have to consider is, because we are a freight corridor, we have an obligation to continue to maintain an operable right-of-way for UP, as well as the tenants that are continuing to operate into San Jose. So, we're definitely juggling quite a bit. I think our next step is really looking at this additional service reduction. And I just want to give you a little bit of a sense here. So we've had conductors doing some counts out in the field, and we're talking about no more than 40 to 50 people who are riding the total Gilroy trains in the morning. So that's an example of how the ridership really has been depleted. And really what it's related to in large part is we serve Facebooks, the Googles, the Stanfords. We serve all of these tech companies who have been sheltering in place for some time. And so that's, when they decided to go virtual in terms of their work, that's when we really started seeing reductions just prior to the shelter in place order. And then with the shelter in place order, then, that sealed the deal for us. So I think, as we look to, ramping back up and getting back to normal, I think on the Caltrain side, what's really going to determine that is when those companies go back to work, physically go back to work. Mm-hmm. I'll say overall, anecdotally, TASI's forces are working every day. And there was never any notion that that this was not essential. And so they've been great partners through what is a real difficult experience. So I'm going to stop there.
Okay. All right. So finally, just wanted to touch on kind of the broader economic picture for a second, the impacts on the funding partners, because all of us putting on my Samtrans hat for a second, and I know you guys represent our other partner, two of you represent our other partners, we're all facing different kinds of problems related to this, but still significant financial challenges. Just note the obvious, which is overall economic activity in the Bay Area, the state, and the U.S. as a whole has been sharply reduced. Economists are fond of throwing darts at dartboards and guessing what GDP is going to be the next quarter. I have never seen the kind of disparity in terms of predictions for what's going to happen in this coming quarter that I've seen. I mean, this is new for all of us. I mean, I'm looking at second quarter, so April through June, estimates ranging from down 14% to down 50%. You know, where in that range does truth lie, or does it lie, you know, outside of that range? You know, regardless, I mean, it doesn't give us any reasonable basis to predict or project. We know that jobless claims are spiking. They were up very sharply, reported last week for the week prior. We're expecting that the jobless claims for last week will probably exceed 2 million and maybe 3 million nationally. We have every reason to believe that sales taxes are likely declining probably sharply. The odds of recession have just skyrocketed. I haven't seen any economist who says that we aren't currently in a recession. So needless to say, that's going to put significant financial pressure on all of the member agencies, particularly as we go into thinking about the budget for next year. We are, at this point, looking at not doing, a full year budget, adoption on our normal cycle. So presentation of a preliminary budget in May and a proposed budget in June, with June adoption of a full fiscal 21 budget. Rather, what we're likely to do is, bring forward some proposed placeholder budget that covers probably a period of 2 to 3 months in the first fiscal year. That will be decided as we kind of get a little closer and hopefully out of some of the uncertainty, if not all of it. But we recognize, again, that there are impacts on our funding partners, and the budget that we develop is going to have to be cognizant of that. It's also, again, just want to remind folks, as I noted earlier, that SamTrans, as the managing agency, has already deferred the billing of $20 million that it has laid out as the managing agency for the first half of the fiscal year, and we anticipate that those expenses will obviously continue to accrue, and at some point that becomes very difficult for SamTrans to carry. Finally, as Jim noted, I think with a really good with a very good explanation of where the effort is, the public transit groups have been very significant in lobbying both the state and federal governments for support of the infrastructure that we supply, both operating and capital. And you know, we think that'll probably continue beyond the efforts this week. So with that, we're available for any other questions.
All right. Before I turn to my colleagues, let's go to public comment. I think there probably is comment for this item.
Yes. There are approximately, I think it's three speakers. So the first question came in for Mr. Baruto, Dave Baruto. He asked, have any GoPass companies withdrawn from the program?
No.
The next public comment was from Jeff Carter. He asked, can we see the raw data used to compile the charts? He goes on to say, tickets sold by fare product type, one way, and day pass revenue by fare product type.
You know, I would say ultimately that data will be available. I will tell you that we are working our staff day, night, weekend, to try to get the information available that we need for our decision making. So I understand Mr. Carter's interest in this, and you know, again, we'll work to try to make this available in a reasonably timely fashion. But right now, we're really focused on the day-to-day decision making that we've got to do.
The next public commenter is Roland LeBrun. However, I am not able to unmute him, and I have not received any specific comment beyond him saying he raised his hand.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. So our mission is passenger transportation in the peninsula, not supporting taxi. And I am convinced that removing the BB bullet from the schedule was a disaster. This is why the ridership tank. Why would you remove baby bullets at the time when traffic is no longer an issue? The situation right now is that we are supporting 100 more TASI employees than you're supporting their daily cabin passengers. Lines of credit are not the solution because you're going to cripple our long-term capital budget capacity. My recommendation is to either run hourly baby bullet only or have a complete shutdown of the service as soon as possible and use surplus Muni, Samtrans, and VTA capacity to provide express bus service. If we don't, we're likely to experience severe headwinds trying to convince voters in November for another 1/8 of a sales tax measure because we're not showing any responsibility. And last but not least, I hope that the last comment that was made proved once and for all that the current arrangement with Samtrans as a major management agency is no longer sustainable and has to be terminated at the earliest opportunity. Thank you.
Are there any other public speakers, Dora?
There are no, excuse me. Mr. LeBrun might have another one or... I think we're clearing it.
Public comment.
Okay. There are no other speakers at this time, or no other comments.
Okay. I'll turn to my colleagues. Ron, do you want to go first this time?
Right now, I don't have any questions.
Okay.
I might, but not at the moment.
Okay. Monique?
No.
I have a couple. You didn't mention shuttle service. What's happening with the shuttle service?
So as we shift and change train service, the shuttle service absolutely will be analyzed to figure out what makes sense to continue to provide or not. So once we get this second cut in place, we'll be working with the shuttle manager to figure out what makes sense in terms of continuing to provide a limited number of trips to meet Caltrain. Or whether, you know, the ridership on those shuttles doesn't warrant continued operation.
Okay. And then do you have the – it looks like the ridership for the weekends were quite low, and that was before this last weekend. You said they were less than 400 on Saturday and Sunday. For each day, I think, Derek, you said that?
Yes, we sold fewer than 400 one-way tickets both Saturday and Sunday.
When you're talking about roughly hourly 42 trains a day on the weekdays, would you cut weekend service completely?
That's a question that we've been kicking around quite a bit. And I think what happens at that point is it becomes a policy discussion as to whether we're going to continue to provide lifeline service for those who absolutely need to use the train. You know, we're already at 90 minutes, every 90 minutes on the weekend. And so I think as we look at additional cuts, I mean, certainly Derek has been advocating for that. But I think as an organization, we need to figure out whether we're going to continue to operate this lifeline level of service on the weekends.
And if we're talking 42 trains during the day, are we going to be hourly in the middle of the day, or will we go to 90 minutes in the middle of the day?
Right now, we're sticking to hourly in the middle of the day.
And do you have a plan for if we decreased from 42 what the next level down would be?
Honestly, I haven't gotten to that yet. We're focused on getting 42 in, and then we'll go to that next decision.
And what's the ridership that we're, I mean, 1,000 riders for all day Friday for 70 trains? I'm one.
Yeah, I want to be clear. It's likely significantly more than 1,000 riders. That's 1,000 sales of one-way tickets. One-way.
So we haven't done any counts on the train itself. Right. How many people are there?
So we have been getting counts from conductors, and in fact, we're doing a count today, and so we'll need to compare that to the. To the ticket sales to figure out what percentage above ticket sales we're gonna be at.
Okay, because you've got some monthly passes and some go.
Correct, exactly,
and the volatility over the last 3 weeks has just been something we've never seen before. So it basically takes all of the existing relationships between. One-way ticket sales riders and GoPass riders or monthly riders, and it tosses them all out the window.
Yeah. So just a couple things to think about. I think I assume this is going to be on the agenda for next week for our full board meeting.
It will.
If you want to bring to us the idea of cutting weekend, what that would look like, and when you would make that choice, at what point, I think that's appropriate. Secondly, I'd like to know, and even if it's just quick and dirty, how many essential workers are riding on the weekends versus people trying to get a hike or a walk in somewhere else other than their own neighborhood, because I heard a lot this weekend about people going out of their own town into another town to go hiking, which is frankly not recommended, and we should not be condoning that in any way. But if we've got essential workers who need to get to Stanford Hospital or need to get up to San Francisco or down to San Jose to get to their essential job, then we need to know that, especially for the coming healthcare crunch that we think is going to happen. So even if it's a quick and dirty on the train, show of hands kind of a deal, maybe that's something that you can bring to us as a full board when we meet next week. That was one thought. The other question I had is there any way, and it may not be easy because I know how we do train sets, but one of the things that VTA did immediately with their light rail was they just, if they had two car trains, they went to one car. I know for us, it's not as easy to do that, but is there any way we can have fewer cars per set running right now as a way to at least save on fuel? And can we, if we do that, can we still maintain the physical distancing that people need to do? I refuse to use social distancing, by the way, because I want it to be, I don't want there to be social distancing. I just want it to be physical distancing.
Okay.
So I use a different term. I just need to clarify.
Yeah.
That's the term I've been using, physical distancing.
Yeah, it's better.
I agree. Okay.
So we'll figure out how we can sort of do an informal poll of sorts, and also we'll get back to you on consist sizes.
If I might add, one of the difficulties in planning is knowing how long the state of affairs is going to exist. The county orders that we're subject to expire April 7th, but they can be in effect automatically extended, and we think it's likely they'll be extended, but we don't know for how long. The state order does not have a date. It is indefinite. And so we don't know how long that's going to be. And the third thing is, even with orders lifted, what we do know is the major employers, before the orders went into effect, told people to work at home. And if we knew better how long this might last before there were people available to ride the trains, we could make better decisions on service adjustments and make them pay off. You know, not that I would hope for this, but if, for example, we knew it was going to be 6 months, then, you know, we could justify the cost of demobilizing, you know, X number of crews and the risk of what it would be to get them back because, you know, we wouldn't be paying them for a long period of time. The challenge now is in a general sense, if we go down to, say, 42 trains or thereabouts, the actual savings other than fuel is minimal for the first month. You know, we're still working the figures. But so if we were after a month, you know, bringing the service back up, what we would really have done is we'd saved on fuel and we'd have some further complications and costs probably in getting it ramped back up. So it's just not an excuse for not making decisions, but a complexity in making them.
Jim, I completely understand, and I thank you for bringing up that point. I think with the governor's order at the end of the week, I think we can assume safely, at the very least, that April 7th is completely out the window, because he was talking in his press conference about 8 weeks, and he never said a number any smaller than 8 weeks. And he said 8 weeks repeatedly. And so I'm not saying we're going to be completely stay at home for 8 weeks, but I think you can safely assume that the numbers will not recover to pre-COVID numbers before June. I think that's a pretty, as safe as there are safe assumptions right now, I think that's a pretty safe assumption. I would be very surprised if that was the case. There are a number of states that have already called off school for the rest of the school year. Stanford and all the universities that I have heard of are among them. That impacts our ridership. That will impact our ridership through the summer because we know that ridership drops off in the summer anyway. So I wouldn't say we're going to be at 10% capacity ridership for 6 months, but I think you can safely assume this will bring us into summer numbers. And I don't think, I mean, Monique, Ron, chime in if you think I'm talking totally out of school, but, and I don't think obviously we don't completely know, but I think that's probably the safer assumption.
Who knows? It's almost impossible to know what's going to happen at this point.
I think there's one thing it's possible to know. It is possible to know that this is not going to return to normal quickly or soon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our planning definitely assumes that.
So if you can bring to the board the cost of various options and what, I don't want to use the term ROI, but what that cost averaging would have to look like in terms of, you know, going with that schedule for whatever amount of time to make it worthwhile. If you can bring those items to the board, I think we need to have this discussion as a full board. And frankly, you know, in almost 2 weeks from now, we'll know more. Because we know more every single day.
Yeah.
And again, hopefully we'll have a little more clarity on where we are with our friends at the federal government and their assistance.
Right. Exactly. And I agree with you, Derek, about not doing the full fiscal year budget. I don't know about your agency, your respective agencies, so my colleagues, but we are talking about the same thing, not exactly the same thing at the city of San Jose, but the way that the mayor structured his budget message was in different tiers. So assuming the worst, here's our essential essential expenses, you know, medium case scenario, we could add these things. Best case scenario, tier three, we can add these things. And the budget will be structured in such a way that we'll approve a budget that may incorporate only part of what we approve, sort of knowing that it's contingent on whether or not we get those revenues. So that's another possible way to think about it.
I have one other question.
Go ahead.
If I may.
Yes.
Of our labor force, are the maintenance staff considered essential, and are they coming to work every day?
Yes.
Because they can't work, from home. So.
Correct. Yeah, the entire TASI staff is considered essential.
But what about the maintenance staff?
Yeah, they are considered essential.
Okay.
I think she. Do you mean maintenance of the building?
Well, no. I mean the maintenance of the trains and really the people who are working the capital program.
Okay. So there just so you know, so there are certain regulatory requirements, particularly on vehicles that are required in terms of daily inspections. And actually right now there are some thought that the commuter rail community might be getting together to lobby the FRA for dispensation from some of these requirements. But in terms of both the right-of-way and the vehicles, all of that maintenance is related to, in part, regulatory and safety. And so it's they're all essential.
Okay. Yeah.
And Monique, I just wanted to pick up on something you said, which was related to the capital program. And Jim can comment on this a little bit more. But my understanding is that everything on the capital program is continuing, that county, the six county, you know, ultimately Moore County order, as well as the governor's order, did treat the kinds of construction projects we are doing as also essential.
Thank you.
I assume that means that the Balfour Beatty contract is still moving ahead and they're still installing the poles and the foundations?
They're still moving ahead.
One of the things we haven't talked about, and I know this is maybe beyond the scope of the Finance Committee, but since we're talking about COVID, are there any materials being distributed, personal protective equipment, to the onboard staff? And also in terms of physical distancing for our essential workers, how is that being handled while they're working in the field?
Sure. I'll take this and then jump in as you feel necessary. So, certainly, in terms of TASI, and all of the messaging that we've been put out is that we are following the CDC guidelines, and so they are wearing whatever personal protective equipment they are responsible to wear as railroad employees. But if you're referring to things like masks, as an example, no, that's not. Our folks are not wearing masks, and they're not being provided masks because that's what the CDC tells us. Now, what we are doing is we're continuing to pursue our cleaning program, and coach cleaners and those folks, you know, I have to double check if they are wearing masks, but they certainly do have protective gloves and the like to protect them when they're out cleaning. In terms of the actual railroad work, everyone has been provided guidance on the need to physically distance themselves, and so that that work is being policed in the field.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions from my colleagues?
Just a general comment. I have a 4 o'clock call, and I know that we're only partway through our agenda, so. I don't know if I should reschedule that call or what.
I think the rest of this can actually move pretty quickly.
Yeah, I'm guessing the rest will move a lot quicker. All right, so that was an informational item. We took public comment, so we're going to go to item number 6, accept statement of revenues and expenditures for February, which seems like a very, very long time ago at this point. Derek, did you want to present at all?
No, I have no presentation. I just note, as was noted in the staff report, that there is a forecast in there that is couldn't be more wrong. So it was developed, obviously, before all of this, and you know, it's developed pursuant to a methodology. We don't bother trying to change the methodology. I can't begin to forecast at the moment for the balance of the fiscal year.
Yeah, no problem. Totally understood.
I would suggest, if I might, I would suggest that we eliminate that item from the board agenda, since the data is no longer relevant.
I'm certainly happy to. I think what I would propose, if you're okay with it, is to not eliminate the item, but rather just eliminate that column. The forecast column.
Okay. Yeah.
How's that?
Yeah, that would be good.
Great.
Would be excellent.
With that, I'm
moving
fine.
Moving it forward as recommended by the Finance Committee in that format.
Easy to do.
Yes. Yeah, so somebody, can you add that to whoever makes the motion to accept the statement of revenues and expenditures for February 2020, can you include that in your motion?
Sure.
I'm happy to entertain that motion.
Oh, okay. So we'll move the item forward with eliminating the projection for the February data.
Second.
Thank you. Dora, do we have any public comment on this item?
I just have one comment from Mr. LeBrun. He suggested putting the item on consent.
It will be on consent in the board agenda.
So roll call vote. Director Collins?
Aye.
Director Zumuda?
Aye.
Chair Davis?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you.
All right. Moving on to item 7. Authorized application for San Mateo County Shuttle Program. Did you want to make a presentation?
There is no presentation for this in particular. Just wanted to answer any questions you might have. This is a something that we do on an every 2-year basis to support the shuttle program. And I want to highlight something that's in the report, because we are in the process of performing a study of the shuttle program in total to better understand how it might more cost effectively be not administered, but, you know, to determine whether we're still doing the right thing, whether shuttles need to change, whether it makes sense to wrap some of those shuttles into the bus system. So it's fairly wide ranging. So this item here would authorize the program to move forward until such time as we came through with some recommendations from that shuttle study. What I don't know is when we expect to see those recommendations.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have any items for public comments on this item?
There are no public comments at this time.
Anything from my colleagues?
I have just one question. The match that comes in for the shuttle program, that comes from the three districts. Is it just San Mateo, or do we share equally in that match?
Yeah. So say again, Peter, if you could. It's an equal share amongst the three partners.
Okay, thank you.
Don't be shy.
Ron, do you have any?
No.
Okay. All right, then I will entertain a motion to authorize this application.
So moved.
Second.
All right, thank you.
Director Collins?
Yes.
Director Zumuda?
Aye.
Chair Davis?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. And item number 8 is to award the contract to Alstom Transportation for locomotive overhaul services. And these are overdue overhauls. Is that correct, Michelle?
Correct. Correct. Long time in coming.
Good afternoon. Julie Taylor.
All right. Do we have any public comment on this item? Oh, do we have a presentation?
Yes, we have a presenter.
Julie, you can just, if they have questions.
Okay. The report's
Sorry,
in your packet.
I didn't see that on me.
That's okay.
See it now.
I'm ready for any questions on this item. And I know Michelle might want to also chime in.
Sure. Let's take questions first.
Yeah.
Do my colleagues have any questions?
Not at the moment.
I have two quick questions. One is this the last time these locomotives are going to be overhauled given the electrification program? And secondly, the federal requirements on the eligibility of vendors, is that something new or has that been in place for a long time?
Do you want to take the eligibility one?
Sure. I don't know how long the Transit Vehicle Manufacturers Program has been in place, but I do know that that's what we did use for this procurement, for our DBE participation goal.
Okay.
And the answer on is this the last time these particular, the first right. and last time these particular locomotives will receive a half-life overhaul, a midlife overhaul? The State of Good Repair program has various components that get changed out over certain intervals, and then the midlife is the most involved, you know, tearing it down. It'll come back in like new condition. What determines, though, whether we will need additional diesel equipment once these need to get replaced is where we're at in terms of electrification and how we intend to provide service to the Gilroy segment. So that's a future planning item for us.
Thank you.
I do have one question, and that is, what's considered midlife?
So it's every 15 years. So it's debatable. The FTA indicates that a service life of a vehicle is 25 years. Our assumption has always been here that service life is 30 years. And so the midlife that these guys wanted to have was supposed to be in 2016 or 2017. So we're past due on this.
Okay. Thank you.
Do we have any public comment on this item?
There is no public comment at this time.
Okay, then I will entertain a motion to award the contract.
Can we make them in both one motion, or do you need separate motions?
For 8 and 9?
No, for 8, there's one and there's two actions.
Oh, you can make it in one.
Okay. I move we award the contract to Alstom Transportation to provide midlife overhaul services. Do I need to read the whole thing?
You can just say, yep. I move staff recommendation.
All Correct. Right, move staff recommendation for items 1 and 2 and item 8.
Second.
Thank you.
Director Collins?
Aye.
Director Zamuda?
Aye.
Chair Davis?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Great. All right, we're going to get you, Director Collins, to your 4 o'clock.
Thank
with
you.
No problems. We're on item 9. And do we have a presentation for that? It looks like we might.
There's no presentation.
Okay.
So I believe there's a staff report in your packet. I'm Howard Beck from Capital Project. So today I'll talk briefly about South San Francisco. This is an agreement with Sprint for the relocation of communication facilities at the station. We are currently in the construction phase as we embark on the next set of projects installation. The next phase, we will be installing the stairwell and ramp at the station. This will necessitate us relocating a fiber optic line that we currently have. So we have been working with all the carriers for the last few months to get this relocated, and we finally got their consent that Sprint will proceed with this relocation of the communication facilities as the lead carrier, and that approximately 180 feet of fiber optic trench will be relocated to its final destination, or final location, rather. So as far as significance, this falls outside of our contract scope, and the JPB is currently responsible for relocating this fiber optic, and the requested action is very significant for us to proceed. Currently, this is covered by the contingency budget, so the project is fully funded, and we are recommending that we proceed immediately with this relocation to avoid any delays. At this time, I'll take any questions, and if Michelle wants to add anything, she can add something.
No, I think we're good, Howard.
All right, let me first see if there's any public comment for this item.
I have one raised hand. I believe it was for the former item, though. I'll just read it. So this is from Drew. He wanted to ask, would the timing of the overhauls speed up depending on what happens this coming months and year? Basically, the units would be overhauled faster more than once.
Yeah, so I don't want to answer this question because I certainly am hoping that the current situation that we're in gets resolved. Basically, we do have to meter the number of locomotives that leave property. And so we need to have no more than two locomotives off property in order to retain our reliability. And this overhaul is sort of a longer-term project. And so the idea is probably we would not be able to accelerate, in the worst-case scenario if today's circumstance persisted. Yes, we could, because we're reducing the number of consists it takes to deliver daily service.
Thank you. With apologies to Howard. Do my colleagues have any questions for Howard?
Nope.
All right. I don't have any questions either.
It seems move like the item.
Great. Thank you.
Did you move?
I did.
Second.
Director Collins?
Aye.
Director Zamuda?
Aye.
Chair Davis?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Great. Item number 10, are there any committee member requests? Doesn't look like there are any. All right.
And I'd like 60,000 riders tomorrow.
Me too.
I don't think anybody can make that happen for you. I'm sorry. Director Collins. The date of our next meeting for the Finance Committee is Monday, April 27th at 2:30 p.m. And we are adjourned.
All right.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I get to do my council meeting this way tonight.
Yep, I'm doing mine this way tomorrow.